Welcome to another exciting episode of Generation One. I have got Troy Gretzka on for you on this episode. It's kind of a long one, but every minute of it is so good. I've been wanting to do an episode for quite a while now with somebody who not only is a producer and comes from an ag background, but is really in the heart of the show family industry. I mean, him and his kids have been so wildly successful in the goat and sheep and cattle ring. Obviously, the Gretzka family needs no introduction. They have a dynasty. His brother, Tracy, obviously has an incredible steer operation. But, you know, so often we hear from producers and we don't hear enough from the families that are out there in the grind, at the jackpot shows, at the majors, being competitive and winning. So this is a really good episode. We get into the heart of the mentality that it takes to be a winner, and what that looks like. Goal setting for show families, packed full of incredible content. But before we get started, as always, a shout out to my wife, Sue Ellen, my daughter, Dallas, and Riley Box, whose family and works for us. And without them, none of this would be possible. We're going to go ahead and we're going to get into this episode, and we're going to take y'all to show church here. Let's do it. Welcome on, Troy. I appreciate you so much working with me and being flexible here and taking the time to be on the Generation One podcast. I know that you are very busy probably this time of year and year round. So like I said, I really appreciate it. For those listening who don't know you, why don't you go ahead and give a background on kind of your guys' operation and your family and what you guys do?
All right. Well, thank you very much, Cody, for having me on today. I guess I'm Troy Gretzka, and I'm a 41-year-old 4-H'er. a little bit of background on our family. My wife, Bridget, and I, and today is July 9th that we're recording this, Cody. Tomorrow is her 40th birthday. So anyone listening when this comes out, make sure you reach out to her and tell her happy birthday. My wife, Bridget, and I, we have 4 kids. We have 2 girls and 2 boys. The girls are Chloe and Morgan. Chloe's 20. She will be a junior at Iowa State this fall. Morgan's 17. Morgan will be a junior in high school. And then the boys, Ty and Trey. Tyson will be a sophomore in high school, and Trey is going to be in 7th grade. So we are certainly a busy household, and pretty well everything in our world, I guess, revolves around livestock and showing livestock we're pretty involved. I grew up showing steers. I was pretty well just a one species kid. Grew up showing steers in what my kids call the 19s. So they call it the 1900s, but it was just the 90s. So I tell them I'm not that old. But grew up showing steers predominantly. There was a year or two. I'm one of 4 kids. So I have a younger sister, Sarah. Her last name's Kern now. She lives right here close. I have 2 older siblings. So Tracy, my older brother, he now lives in Abilene, Texas. And so Tracy operates the Gretzka Show Steers. And then we have another sister, Gina, that's a year and a half older than Tracy. And actually, Gina lives a half mile down the road from me. So my folks, Dan and Cheryl, we're just outside of Cordon. They live right on the edge of town. So we're all pretty close, other than Tracy being in Abilene now, but actually he's up here quite a bit. So we grew up showing steers, Sarah and I, you know, being closer in age. Tracy and I are the middle two, and there's 11 years between us. So mom and dad kind of had 2 kids and then kind of had 2 more kids. So Sarah and I pretty well showed together. And with that age difference, actually, Tracy was more of a show dad than a brother. Honestly, like when we were growing up and showing, and his interest in the cattle, obviously, and you know, his passion through clipping and selling steers, you know, that obviously greatly impacted Sarah and I in our show career. So, predominantly steers. We did show maybe heifers like 1 year. had a neighbor that raised shorthorns, and Sarah and I showed a shorthorn heifer. And we also showed a little bit of lambs, not very competitively, just kind of at our county level. We did lambs maybe 2 or 3, 4 years in there. And then actually when I went to college, Sarah got to show hogs like her last year or maybe 2 years. And that was pretty much because I was going to college with a bunch of other guys that was kind of around the hog deal. So I kind of brought a few of them home for her, but grew up predominantly steers. I guess today, Bridget and I and our kids, what our operation is Gretzka Livestock. Our focus as far as our production side of our small operation, is the goats. So we're actually down on numbers a little bit right now. We're around 70-ish head of does. We do some embryo transfer work. We actually do a lot of natural breeding, with our own bucks. But our focus is to raise those, you know, late November, mostly December, into January born kids. We've went to having an annual sale, and we do it's a private treaty bid off right here at the farm. It's kind of an open house style for a couple weekends before. Everything has a base price. I mean, they're all based at the same price, and then it is pretty well a phone bid off sale. So that we started doing that. This is 2 years ago, I guess, we started doing that. It's been really good for us. Have totally nothing against the online format, and we do a viewing only online, so people can go ahead. We'd like for people to come and look, and but people can kind of go back. We have pictures posted on the online viewing only. I normally have videos on most of them, but we like for people to come look at the stock and visit with them. So that's a little bit of our focus, I guess, of where we're at right now, Cody.
That's awesome. So coming from such a steer background, and obviously, you know, as a whole, between you and your siblings, a really like powerhouse steer family in the country here, what got you guys into the goats?
So how we started into the goats is, you know, I mentioned that Tracy lives in Abilene now, and Jake Campbell bought Tracy's old place, which is just down the road from us, and they still operate that as Gretzka Show Steers North. So Jake started working for Tracy, I believe it's around 12 years ago, and 12, 13 years ago. Well, at the same time that Jake started working for my brother Tracy, Bridget and I, we would have our own steer sale. Steer and heifer sale the same weekend as Tracy, same format and everything in October. The year that Jake started, Jake's cousin, Tyler McVeigh, he started working for me that fall. And actually there was a couple years in there, Tyler was going to college in Missouri, and he would take classes on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then he would be at our place 4 days a week. And Tyler now seasonally works for Tracy and Jake with the GSS crew. But when Tyler was working for us, him and his mom, TJ, they started raising a few goats. And Tyler kind of came to me and he says, hey, mom and I are going to raise some goats. Would love for you guys to show them. And it happened to be Chloe, our oldest one. It was her first year in 4-H. And so her first year in 4-H, I thought, yeah, we'll get us a couple goats. That'll be a fun, easy, laid-back county fair project, right? And it was. I'll never forget Tyler's mom. She lives up kind of northeast Iowa. And I remember getting back on Interstate 80, looking at my wife. We had goats in the trailer, and I thought, what in the world are we doing here, you know? We took them home, and we did everything wrong, probably. And we got along good for the first year, and Chloe really just, maybe one or two local jackpots, and then their end point was just our county fair. So that was our first introduction into the goats. And I'm a competitive person by nature. So after that first year, you know, and just the showmanship side of it, you know, I I didn't know how to coach my daughter. I was like, Chloe, I don't know how you're supposed to do it, but I know what you're doing isn't right. And that was about the extent of it. And we thought, well, if we're going to do this, we want to get better at it. And I've told a lot of people this. The funnest part about the goats has been when we started, we knew absolutely nothing about it. We've been fortunate to find some success. And a lot of that has been, you know, we transferred a lot of the presentation side to the goats from our cattle background, obviously. We transferred the presentation side from the cattle, but we wanted to get better. And the best way that we did that was we went to shows and we watched people that were successful, watched the people that were winning, what they did, and a lot of people, you know, kind of a pet peeve of mine, I guess, Cody, is, you know, people that are specific to one species, they're like, well, you know, that's a goat or that's a sheep. I don't know anything about them. Really, all four species, generally, they're pretty much the same. You just have to adjust your eye, I guess. And, you know, you can transfer, no matter what your background is or what your comfort level is, you know, what species you're familiar with, you can always transfer it over to another one. So that's kind of how we got our start in the goats.
Perfect. And I agree with a lot of what you said there is there's so much crossover. You know, I will say, obviously, when it comes down to feeding, you know, maybe, you know, obviously you feed them a little bit differently, but even once you really start breaking it down to the basics, it's still, you know, grain, hay, water, exercise, you know, when it gets down to it. So
yep.
There's a lot to be said for that, and especially in the sheep and goats deal. You know, I'll be honest, I have nothing against goats, and there's nothing I love more than looking at a really cool fitted up goat, but for some reason goats and I don't get along. But even, you know, I've stepped in at a few jackpots to help fit, and yeah, all of my cattle background, you know, really comes in handy because there is a lot of crossover there in terms of fitting and just how you're kind of managing and handling those, especially on the doe side. You know, it's kind of like managing little mini show heifers.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. You have to read their maturity. I think it's the biggest key. I mean, and I'm a firm believer there's a correlation between maturity pattern and metabolism. You know, those later maturing animals, you know, are going to be higher metabolism. They're going to require more calories. And you're going to have to push them harder. You know, I think that's, you know, we can get into kind of the feed and stuff later on if you want, but, you know, reading that animal and being hard on your own stock, I think is one of the big keys to being a successful home.
Oh, I 100% agree. It always shocks me how many kids I'll talk to at shows and say, you know, what would you change about this animal? And it's like, well, I don't know. You know, I think it's pretty good. It's like, that's our job. You know, when they get to our house, it's like, obviously you buy the best one or raise the best one you can afford to. And then you get there and it's like, yeah, all the good parts, that's great. But, you know, there's nothing you can really do about that or that, you know, we're just trying to highlight. We got to look at them and say, okay, what's wrong with this thing? And how are we as showmen or as feeders, as fitters, whatever, how are we going to do our best to kind of, you know, minimize as much of that as we can. So I agree. Yep. I think it's important to, it doesn't make like you too hard on them and it doesn't make you like a poor showman or something to pick your animal apart. In fact, I think that's what we should all be doing. So I agree with you there. And you mentioned about your feed. I think now's the perfect time to get right into that because I know obviously that's a big part of what you do in your career is with feed. And so how does that play into your family's, I guess, show career and in what you do on the daily?
Yeah, absolutely. So I work for ADM, ADM Mormon Show Tech. So we're the feed company with three names, especially on the show side. So I've been with ADM for a little bit over a year. I've been in the feed business for 5 or 6 years. You know, it's something that I really, really enjoy. My title with ADM is a commercial product specialist. So where we live, Cody, in South Central Iowa, You know, here in southern Iowa, northern Missouri, we're really in the heart of cow country. And, you know, a lot of people think when they think of Iowa, they think of cornfields. But down here in the southern part of the state where we live, it really is good cow country. So the bulk of my job and what I do with ADM is I work with cow-calf producers. You know, I work with ADM dealers and assist them out in the country and as far as selling to the end user. And I work with a lot of cow-calf base. We do have some fed cattle in our area, but that's normally or the bulk of that would be in a backgrounding type scenario. So there's not just a ton of finished cattle right here where we are. So it's predominantly cow-calf. So I work with that. But then I'm also very fortunate with ADM that I'm very involved with the show feed team. And that's something that's obviously, you know, my passion and something I enjoy very much. And I'll field calls from across the country and across species, I guess, because, you know, ourselves, our own family is very diversified as far as showing livestock. And, you know, I can field a lot of those questions. I think that one of the biggest things to answer your question, Cody, is what helps me professionally in my job. It is our family's track record is kind of my rapport, you know, especially in my professional status. So, and the other part of that is I have been our feed customer. I've been that person my entire life. I've managed cow-calf operations and feed stock operations. So I've been in their shoes. So it's very natural. And I have a lot of my customers that, you know, you can present two or three different scenarios as far as solutions to a producer's nutritional needs. And 90-some percent of the time, they'll look at you and, what would you do, Troy? And, you know, I think my life experiences and just being within the industry is what really helps me professionally with my job in the feed business.
That makes complete sense. And I agree. You know, there's a lot of companies out there across the country. And I know sometimes it's just hard to find employees and people to work for it. But, you know, people that come from a very specialized background, I guess, you know, we've had reps mm-hmm. out in this area, obviously not for your company, but for other feed companies that, you know, maybe they're a horse person, you know, which is great, you know, and if you want to buy horse feed, yep. you know, probably nobody knows more than them, but because they don't have that kind of diversified background into the livestock industry, you don't get a lot of help out of them. So you're on your yep. own. So I appreciate that you have that kind of diversified background across species. And like you said, it helps that you're at home feeding a lot of these species. So, you know, you can relate and say, I've seen this, I've been there. And so that's awesome. And certainly a luxury, it seems like, across some feed companies.
Absolutely. Cause we're using all those products in our barn too. You know, so we, you know, it makes it very easy for me as far as to convey to customers, you know, how to implement a product, when they'll see results. You know, some products will have to feed longer, you know, before we see a desired result compared to others. And that's all been within our personal use, I guess, is what makes it very, it increases the comfort level, not only for myself, but for my customers too.
Right. No, and I can certainly appreciate that. So you had mentioned in there about how kind of, you know, your family's track record really helps kind of bolster, I guess, you know, your opinion when it comes to feed. And obviously it's something people can look up to and respect. And so I want to take a minute here and talk about your family a little bit, kind of a brag on your kids moment here. I have a daughter, so I'm fully with that. And she's just now starting to show peewee. So I'm all about bragging on kids, and there's no shame in that. So why don't you go ahead for Absolutely. People that don't know you or your family, give a little bit of background about, you know, your family success. And also not only that, but kind of where you guys started as a family, you know, in showing to where you are now? Because I'm kind of at those beginning stages with my daughter being four, you know, and there's a lot of questions that, you know, as a parent go through your head. It's like, do we hit it hard right at the beginning, or are we just kind of finding middle of the road animals and we're just having fun till that fire's kind of lit? You know, there's a lot of things I feel like that goes through your head as a parent. So not only about your guys' success, but kind of how your mindset behind getting your kids into it and to where you are now.
Yep. Well, I guess there's a lot of different things pop into my mind as you ask that question, Cody. You know, like I said, when we got started in the goat side of it, we got started Chloe's first year 4-H. You know, she showed them at a local level. I'm really, really big on, hey, let's set goals. Let's sit down as a family and kind of, well, I mean, we ask the kids, hey, what do you want to do? I mean, because if they're not invested, if it's not their idea, you know, I don't ever want to push them into something that they don't want to do. You know, they've got to be behind it. So I remember, like, Chloe, like, she showed them that first year, showed the goats at County Fair that first year, and she was like, you know what, I want to take goats to State Fair. Okay. And so, and we were still, and I say then, we were still in the stages of just wanting to be a better home. And honestly, today, several years later, that's my number one goal, is I just want us to be a good home. I want us to be considered a good home. So I think we focus on that first and foremost. But Chloe wanted to take goats to State Fair. And we did. We went her second year of 4-H, which in Iowa, we have this really silly rule that 4-H exhibitors can't show at our state fair their first year of 4-H. So out here, you join 4-H the fall that you start fourth grade, is how it works in Iowa. So we start 4-H when you join, or when you enter fourth grade, and so that next summer would be your first, I guess, show season of 4-H, but you can't show at state fair that first year. Chloe showed fat steers at Denver and Louisville before she was old enough to show at our state fair. I remember she had one of her very first fat steers that she had. She was only, her birthday's in January, so in Louisville, she was still six. She wasn't seven yet. She showed a fat steer in Louisville, right in there with the college kids. And I look back on that now, and I'm like, what in the world was I thinking? You know, the calf was really good natured. It went really well. But, like, we didn't start any of the other kids on the big species that early. But she did that. After she showed goats at State Fair, she was like, hey, Dad, I want to try to win the State Fair. And we just continued to get better. What I would call maybe our breakout year in the goats would be 2013. I jotted some notes down because my memory's not the best, Cody, but I think it was 2013 was a weather that Chloe showed, to come from Tyler McVeigh. I'll still remember his name. His name was Willie. And she drug that thing all over. So that one, she went to several jackpots that year. He was third overall at our Iowa State Fair. And then went to Exarban. I don't know if Exarban's a show that you're familiar with, Cody, being on the West Coast, but it's out in Nebraska. So it used to be Nebraska and surrounding states, and they've actually expanded that. I think there's maybe 9 or 11 different states that can come to Exarban. He was what took him out there. He was second in class to the champion weather. We did not have him DNA'd for Kansas City, so we entered him in Louisville. We went to Louisville, and, you know, one thing I want to throw in there, that goat was really, really good for Chloe. He was her first, what I would call, good one, for one, and he was an awesome one for her to learn and hone her skills as far as a showman on. That goat had quite the personality. Everybody in the family, I mean, he was everybody's buddy. But he showed really, really well. He's one of them gentle ones that still showed well. We took that one to Louisville, and she ended up being reserve overall. She was reserve overall behind Dale Hummel's daughter, down there in Louisville. One other highlight of that trip was Chloe. I think she was reserve junior showman in Louisville. And so that was our first big one, you know. Well, being a steer guy, I thought, you know, we just got reserve at Louisville. We're in the sale, you know. Well, goats don't really go in the sale at Louisville. So kind of like, here's your banner, go home. So like, all right, now what do we do? So we had him DNA'd for Denver. And I remember it was Bridget's idea. Hey, let's go ahead and DNA that one for Denver. And I'm like, oh, well, never. Nah, we don't need to do that. There's no way we can drag one this long. Well, sure enough, we took him to Denver. And honestly, that goat, he was one of them ones that we never pushed on really hard and we never sat on really hard. We just kind of kept running him and kept feeding him a little bit and just kind of took a steady approach, and he always held together. That goat was at our state fair like 82 pounds, Exarban 84. I remember Louisville at the North American, he was 89. And then we take him to Denver in January. He wins the middle division at 91 pounds. Wins the middle division at Denver. And I thought, oh, my God, this was a euphoric year. You know, that was a really cool experience. I had someone come up to me the night before the show. They have showmanship in Denver, of course. And Chloe was in showmanship. It kind of got down to her and another one. And the guy that was sorting showmanship that year, he worked those two girls, I think, close to 10 minutes when he just got down to the two of them. And it was a really cool deal. I was really proud as a dad. It was a really cool moment. I had someone come up to me ringside and they whispered in my ear, and you're like, to my knowledge, that other young lady's never been beaten a showmanship contest. And I said, well, she probably won't tonight. He said, that's true, but everyone now knows she maybe could have. You know, and Chloe got reserved to her, and that was a cool deal. That was one of the biggest compliments at that time I took as a dad, is to be complimented on our kids' showmanship skills. I mean, Chloe was really good at it. You know, and when she, you know, I think on the goat deal, these kids kind of hit their prime, that 12 to 14 to 15, you know, 16, they get older and they get bigger and they get taller. And sometimes it's a little bit challenging for those older kids. You know, mostly we think kids kind of hit their peak, you know, at their last years of 4-H. But on these goats where they're such a smaller creature, it can be a little bit more challenging for the older kids. So that was a really cool year. That's what kind of really kicked Chloe off. I mean, we got more miles out of that goat than I think whatever I ever thought would ever be possible. So he won the middle division, got left standing in the grand drive. But six goats make the sale, just the three division champion and reserves. And so he made the sale in Denver. And that was kind of the kickoff, I guess, for us showing on a bigger stage. So, from that point, from that fall, that season on, Chloe had a lot of really, really good run. So that was Louisville, been, you know, November of 13. So then we're at Denver, we're January of 14. That next year, she had two weathers that she showed that year. We have a small point system in Iowa. A goal of hers that year was, Dad, I want to win the point series. I said, okay. I think with those two weathers, she went on and had grand and reserve like eight times in jackpot shows in Iowa. And those two weathers would kind of bounce back and forth, you know, and take turns a little bit. One of them wins the Iowa State Fair that year in 2014. Chloe also had a doe that year, and she wins the doe show in 2014 at the state fair. The other weather goes on and wins Exarban in September 2014. So that was obviously a huge year for us. Chloe come back the next year in 2015, wins the Xarban for the second time in a row. That was really awesome. 2016, little sister starts coming along. So Morgan's getting older. She's getting into 4-H. Morgan, you know, she kind of wants a shot at it. So, what was really neat was, you know, we set a goal as a family to win our state fair. And we did that in 2014. When we accomplished that, that was a goat that we bought. When we accomplished that, our next goal, and I guess right about all during this is about the time we start, you know, acquiring a few does and start raising a few. So 2 years later, 2016, Morgan wins the market show at the state fair. And that was a goat we raised, you know, so that made it even sweeter. You know, and I'll never forget, I had a friend of mine kind of, you move into the state fair on steer show day on Wednesday with goats. You move in with them, and then you show markets the next day on Thursday, breeding on Friday. And we moved into the barn that afternoon. I had a good friend of mine. He kind of caught me off guard. He made a comment to me. He says, "Yeah, I kind of feel sorry for Morgan." That's why I said, he's like, "Oh, she just kind of in her sister's shadow, you know, and we pretty tough to show as good as her sister does." I said, "Ah, you just wait." I said, "She out show her sister, you know, any day of the week." He's like, "There's no way." I said, Yep. She's really come along." And, you know, Morgan went in there that day, and it was a very competitive year as far as quality in the 4-H show that year. And honestly, there was about two or three pretty nice ones that were just a little bit different kinds. And, you know, I remember after she won, we're taking a backdrop picture. We get done taking a picture. I turn around to the judge and I'm going to shake his hand. I said, "Hey, thank you. I'm Dad." And, he says, "I want to tell you something." He says, "The end of the day," he says, there was two or three of them that's probably good enough to win this deal. He said, deciding factor, she embarrassed the rest of them. And that was a really cool moment for me, you know, because that goat that Morgan had that year, he wasn't the easiest one to show. And there was a lot of hours put in on that one. And, you know, to know that what the deciding factor was her ability to get the job done in the ring is what made me even more proud. I mean, at that point, I didn't care that we'd raised it. I didn't care, you know. My kid did it, you know, and kudos to her because she did it on her own. You know, we can do everything we want to at home, feed them, exercise them, you know, you fit them for the show, but by golly, when you send them in the ring, they're it's kind of theirs to run with. And, that's where that was what separated her from the pack. That was a proud moment for me. So Morgan gets her turn. She wins state fair in 16. Chloe actually had a doe that won the breeding show that same year. It kind of gets to be a blur after that. I counted up. I actually went back in the house this morning, Cody, when you sent me a question sheet. And I looked up on the entertainment center. I was trying to take a tally. But I think between... At our state fair, we have the 4-H and FFA junior shows, and then we have an open show. On the market side, between the junior and the open shows on the market side, we've had five champions at our state fair. And on the doe side, just the junior 4-H or FFA on the doe side, we've had five champions also. I know in addition to that, Morgan had reserve FFA in 19, so 2 years ago, on the market side. That was a really, really good year for us. You know, we do a top five 4-H and top five FFA, you know, on the breeding does, breeding and market, I guess. But that year in the doe show, we had the FFA show, we had grand, reserve, and third overall FFA, and then the 4-H show between our kids and customers. We had in the 4-H, we were reserve and fifth overall that year. So we had five of the top 10. You know, somebody jokingly said as we were taking pictures afterwards, you know, we show that those on Friday, Saturday afternoon, evening is the open show the next day. They're like, boy, you might as well just scratch everything tomorrow because it won't get any better. And, you know, I said, well, my favorite one never left the pen today. And they're like, what are you talking about? And back to that silly, you can't show your first year in 4-H. Well, Trey, our youngest one, he had a doe that year, and he couldn't show in the 4-H show. So we brought his doe to State Fair just for him to show in the FFA. And all those does were showed the next day. Trey beat them all. He wins the open show. So that was a really, really fun year for us. So I don't know if you're very familiar with the showdown structure, I guess, Cody. Have you heard of that in Iowa, these showdowns?
You know, I've heard of it, but to be honest, I'm not very familiar with how all of that breaks down.
So the way that works is every county in the state of Iowa is included in this. There's 99 counties, I think is what there is in Iowa. Bulk of the county fairs are right here in July. And I mean, that's the season, you know, we're getting ramped up and getting into right now. There's a few county fairs that have, especially in Northern Iowa, have their like in September. So for those counties, they have a qualifying show. The way that works is you have to go to your county fair and you have to be a champion. You have to win your county fair to qualify for your district showdown. I think there's 10 districts in the state of Iowa. So the one where we live is South Central Iowa district, and there's 12 counties. So when we have our district showdown, there'll be, you know, 12 steers, 12 heifers, you know, so on and so forth. There'll be 12 of everything come in. So you come in, you have to earn your spot at your county to get to your district. They have the district showdown. The champions from that, I think this will be the fourth or fifth year, they have an all-Iowa showdown. The 10 champions from those districts come together to the all-Iowa showdown, and that one kind of changes location. They kind of rotate it around each year. But those 10 champions come into the all-Iowa. I think last year we had 16 goats that we'd raised qualify for district showdowns. It was a little bit slower year for us at the All Iowa. I think we had two or three qualify, so they won their districts and qualified for the All Iowa. The year before, in 19, that was a really, really good year for us, especially on the doe side. I think the only weather that we had was that one of Morgan's. That was reserve at state. He won the open show at State Fair. He's reserve and FFA show at State Fair. He was also reserve at the All Iowa. So he won our district, and then it was reserve at the All Iowa showdown. But when we got to that All Iowa showdown, it was way up north in Britt, Iowa that year, I think. And so there's 10 districts. We had when that doe class came in, we had five of them. We'd raised five of the district champions. So that was a really neat year for us. The Herbold family up in northwest Iowa, they had a doe that I thought was extra, extra special. And that one ended up winning the All-Iowa. Kind of had high hopes for that one at State Fair that year, but she's the one that ended up fifth overall on the 4-H side. So it's been a really good and cool run for us.
I'll say, I mean, that I think a lot of families and a lot of people out there listening, they listen to kind of that run of success you guys have had, and that's kind of the dream. My question is kind of going all the way back to the beginning, you know, and like you said, you grew up showing steers and had a little bit of involvement with lambs. What, when you first got into the goats, what would you say were some of the contributing factors to your guys' success? Because you were really, you know, learning a new species. Like you said, the kid who's working for you guys kind of just dipped your toe in the water. What took you from taking a county fair, you know, goat to kind of that quick upswing to where, you know, you're a competitor at state fair and on a national level?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I think, you know, our attention to detail and obviously the presentation side of it, I would say has always been and continues to be our strong suit. Do we have the absolute best goats that money can buy? Not at all. You know, we're our own operation. You know, I was Ryan Moore tweet, here's your shout out. You know, him and I were talking the other day. We flushed together just this week. And, you know, we were talking about doing some matings. And I told him, I said, hey, our game with our home operation, the goats that we raise, we're just trying to be conservatively progressive. You know, we kind of had, I think we had kind of, and it goes back to the very first buck we bought off Tyler, you know, and we had showed weathers out of him, the old juicy buck. And they were kind of, I don't know if ahead of their time is the right way to describe it, but they were a little sheepier. I always call them a little sheepier built. They always had that cool pattern, good looking, just stout enough, you know. And so we kind of started with that, and another really big contribution to our stock that we raised is we bought a bucker. Oh, we lost him a little over a year ago, I think. Our truth be told buck. They come from Chris Kellen's in Oklahoma. He was a rumor has it on a Starbuck 900. We bought that buck from Chris. That was a very big purchase for us. But that buck didn't owe me nothing. You know, you raise goats, you kind of get used to losing them. And he was one of the first ones that got an actual kind of ceremony and burial. You know, cause that dude didn't owe us nothing, you know, like right now, currently our buck battery now is like six. We have like six bucks around. And I think five of them are either sons or grandsons of truth. So, I mean, he and we've got a pile of daughters around. So that buck is what I think really projected our own operation, our own genetics, and made us more competitive. But, you know, we just took everything from our cattle background, implemented it, and then we watched the people that were successful in the goat deal. And I think, you know, not to, you know, I try to think of myself as fairly modest, but one thing that, you know, I think made a difference is we weren't afraid to kind of change the game. You know, goats have always been and will continue to be, bigger, tougher shows in Texas and Oklahoma. And I mean, they've got better goats, you know, down there. But in Iowa, you know, in the kind of the upper Midwest here, I'll never forget one of those first years. It might have been our first year that we went. It was our first or second year that we ever showed goats. We were at a local jackpot, and I had had a guy I knew, and him and his family had been fairly active in the boar goat deal, especially with the registered stock. And when it started out, you know, that's kind of where it was with the registered stock when the boars were first imported and being shown. And, you know, they were very successful. And I knew him well enough. I said, hey, I want to ask you some dumb questions, you know. And, you know, the weather's obviously, you know, we're going to shear them off like a lamb, you know, just not as tight. And we're going to focus on leg hair. But I'm like, these does, you know, like what's the proper way to clip these does? And he started, I mean, he was very open with me. He's like, you need to get this guard here and this guard there and, you know, and do this and that. And I was like, well, I remember asking him, I was like, well, can't you just peel their front end out and then clip the rest of it freehand? And I remember he kind of laughed and chuckled and says, Troy, it's not a calf. It's not a show steer. It can't be done. Goat hair's different. And, you know, honestly, I am glad he said that to me, because I remember we went home and I was like, by God, it can be done. And so that's where we really started upping our game as far as working our hair, getting in better shape. And, you know, I 90-some percent of our customer base, as far as our goat customers, are what I would call crossover families. And majority of them come from like a cattle background. You know, a lot of them ask me, you know, how do we clip the does? We clip them like a heifer. They're like, okay, we'll do. And I think it's become more common, you know, but, you know, I think we hit the goat deal right at a really good time where they weren't clipping them as much. And to say it was well received right off the bat, not always. You know, we go to some of these, you know, jackpot shows and stuff like that, and there'll be some of those old traditional judges, and we'd come in there with a fuzzy haired doe blocked out like a show heifer, and had her legs, you know, fit up big, and sometimes they liked it and sometimes they sure didn't. But it's what we liked. It's how we thought they looked better, and we just kept doing it. And I'm not saying I started any of that, but I think we helped the progression, or helped it in our area in the upper Midwest as far as being accepted. So, you know, I think that was one of the biggest things.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there in a couple things, because I'm just thinking back to the timeline of kind of what you guys were talking about back there in 13 and 14, and when you were really starting to fire on all cylinders then. I mean, at that point, it really was, you know, kind of an emerging market across the country as far as the goats. I mean, obviously, they had been around for a lot longer than that, but it becoming, you know, kind of a jackpot animal and something that was growing exponentially at that time. But like you said, not a lot of people knew how to work it. And then I would say too, yep, a lot of people, you know, the first time I ever fit on goats, you know, I a lot of people like, oh, you know, their hair's bad, it's this, it's that, you know, and the reality was they just weren't working their hair like you would work cattle hair, you know. And yep, and the first time I clipped on them, I said, that's because you're spoiled, you know, you're coming from show and show steers that, you know, got this big fluffy good mane hair or whatever it is. I grew up showing Charlet cattle and working Charlet hair in the summer. So I said,
you were perfect. You,
yeah,
were perfect.
I said no haircut. Right, I said, this is continental cattle hair is what this is. And and it's like, if you want good hair, and I tell people all the time, you know, we've got families out here that I try to, like I said, stay out of the goats as much as I can. But when I'm just, you know, talking to families and stuff, they'll say, well, you know, gosh, our goat just doesn't have hair like that. And I'm like, well, that goat has hair like that because it's been worked. And I can promise you that hair does not come, especially on does, those big fluffy does. It's like that family's put a lot of work into it, and that's why that hair looks like that. Because, yeah, like I said, they're basically like trying to grow good hair on continental cattle. It's a whole different ball game. Yep. It's coarse, and it wants to just lay down and be slick all the time. So, yeah, it's certainly,
yeah, that is a perfect analogy.
Yeah, it's the first time I fit a leg. I was like, God, I'm back in the good old days. I'm fitting Charlet legs. Here we go. You know, get me the tail adhesive. So it no, uh-huh. I think that's really cool, and I think that's good. You know, I think the same thing about the sheep market a lot of the times. I think that some, and this isn't like, you know, there's a lot of very, very good sheep fitters doing a lot of very good progressive things out there across the country, but I think as a whole, there's a bit of a lackluster when it comes to it, because, I mean, we're shearing them all down really tight. I think the attention to, yep, like hides is really cool. I think that's really progressive. I think a lot of people are there. But when we get down to those legs, you know, I started out here, and especially out west, you know, we're always like 10 years behind whatever's happening in Iowa. Like, we're definitely a decade behind, you know. And I got into it, and coming from a cattle background and getting into sheep, I was like, you know, why can't we fit these things a little bit? Like, let's throw like a little bit of adhesive or something in there, because I hated how you would sit there and everyone's like, you know, you got to cart out the legs, you got to put this product in it, and then you walk out in the ring, you know, the kid sets the feet a couple times, you know, there's shavings, there's whatever, and next thing you know, you've just got matted balls of wool on a leg that you just spent, uh-huh, all this time carting out. And walking into the ring, you're like, damn, that lamb looks really good. You know, coming out, it looks like it just went through war. And so I was like, let's put some adhesive, yeah, like, let's paint this. And you know what? I will tell you, like anybody getting into any industry, some of the fit jobs were yikes. You know, I look back at pictures and I'm like, why did I think that looked good? But now it's like that we've kind of dialed things in a little bit. I think that there's a lot to be done in the sheep ring. So I'm just going to call out all the sheep people and say, I think there's a lot more that can be done with leg wool and the way that we fit sheep that way. But I can relate to that, you know, out, especially out west, you know, the first time I painted legs and there was no rules saying that we couldn't, you know, we got kind of just a dingy leg. I was like, I'm going to paint it black, you know? And oh my gosh, you know, it's like half the show was trying to kick us out. You would have thought, you know, we had done something crazy illegal. And I'm like, well, there's not a rule that says I can't do it. So it wasn't, but now you're starting to see that more and more. And so I do. I think it's good to always be pushing the edge on presentation because, like you said, sometimes I will say there's been a lot of times in my life I've shown cattle, especially I really focus on the heifer side of things a lot, that I'll be honest, I won when I didn't have the best animal, but we out-presented that family, you know, better hair, better fit job, absolutely, better showman. And that's really the name of the game. You know, in my mind, I don't really see anything wrong with that.
That's why it's a show.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100% because, I mean, it is a show, you know, and to me, I mean, like when you break down what it takes to be successful, I mean, obviously you got to start off with one that's good enough or that has the potential to be good enough. But them things have to be, they have to be fed right. They have to be exercised right. Your skin and hair, your presentation has to be right. But then when you go in the ring, and I've said this, we've gotten into showing the lambs a little bit more competitively, the past year or so. And when the sheep and goats, and I've said this, I was like, you give me a good sheep or goat showman, they can show any species. I don't care which one. But when them things go in the ring, I think that showmanship side of it, you know, it's like 65-70%. I mean, you can have the best one by a mile. You don't get them stuck right, and it's probably not going to win a big one.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I tell the sheep kids that all the time. You know, I think within a class, under the same judge, you can send a kid in with a lamb. And if they're a very inexperienced or terrible showman or whatever it is, I firmly believe that animal can place fifth in that class. And if you could rewind the clock, put a really good national caliber showman on that lamb, walk him in there, that lamb can win the class. Because it is. It's crazy the difference that a showman makes in the presentation makes. And I think I agree more so in goats and sheep that it matters even more. But you know, same thing, you get maybe you get someone walking in with a lazy steer or a lazy heifer, you know, and they're not really getting that head up. They're not getting that animal going. I swear to God, I've seen people like show structural problems into cattle that aren't there because they're not a good enough showman to really get that animal out and move or to keep that head up. And next thing you know, the judge is, you're third in class and the judge is, this one's a little coarse shouldered. You know, they don't get around the ring as well. It's like, no, that's just a fat, lazy heifer and a lazy showman. And that's what's happening there, you know? So I do. Yeah. I agree. I think it matters. Showmanship matters so much.
It's absolutely huge. And I've got to give props to my wife, Bridget, and the kids, because the majority of the showmanship practice is on them. You know, I'm normally, you know, either on the road or working or calling on dealerships on a daily basis. And honestly, you know, our sheep and our goats in our barn now, I probably see them on average with a blanket off 2, maybe 3 times a week is about it. You know, I'm not seeing them every day. Now, personally, the feed guy in me, I like that because I can see changes easier when I'm not looking at them every day, and I can make those adjustments. So, in our barn, like a lot of other families, you know, we have the whiteboard, the official whiteboard. Dad's role. I am the keeper of the whiteboard. If what I put on the whiteboard, that's what gets fed. Am I the one feeding them all the time? Majority of the time, not. But as long as they do what's on the whiteboard, it's my responsibility to make sure the right directions are on that whiteboard. So, and that's kind of how we do it. But as far as the showmanship, it's Bridget and the kids. They're the ones spending the hours in the yard, and they're the ones putting more time into it. You know, I, my kids have turned to me and they're like, well, how many goats have you showed, Dad? Well, they didn't have goats when I showed, so obviously none. You know, and I was a horrible sheep showman, I'm sure. You know, so I mean, I can tell them what I like and what, you know, what looks better, but as far as doing it myself, you know, I'm not the guy for that job. And honestly, my wife Bridget, she didn't grow up showing. I mean, this was all new to her when we got together, you know. And I tell you what, though, for somebody that didn't grow up in the industry, and I for livestock, I've learned over the years, and she's told me this repeatedly, you know, just listen to Mama, just listen to your wife, because there's been a few times that she's picked out a goat kid, you know, at a week old or 2 days old. She's like, hey, this one's pretty good. I'm like, yeah, we'll see. Normally, she's right. You know, she doesn't miss them by far. So I give credit where credit's due, because the showmanship and her eye for livestock. Now, the feeding and all that stuff, that's where I do get to kind of be in charge. But that's kind of my role. And I think that's one thing to bring up, I guess, Cody. It is a team effort, you know, and everybody does have their role, you know.
Oh, without a doubt. And I tell people that all the time, because I'll see these families that want to, you know, get more and more and more competitive. And it seems like sometimes because they feel like it's kind of a them versus the world type of mentality, I see their circle and their team getting smaller and smaller and smaller, when in reality, the more competitive you want to be, the bigger your team needs to be, the more people you need to be going to for feeding advice, the more people for fitting, you know, the team's got to get bigger. And I tell people all the time, I said, you might look at it and see, you know, this national champion backdrop, and you see this kid standing there with this lamb, but it's like, whether there's a pile of people in that backdrop or picture or not, I promise you there's 20 people behind that animal that made that happen. And
and it needed a little piece of each of them to get there.
Yes. And everybody, you know, contributed something. And maybe that was just seeing it one time. They stopped by her house and said, hey, you know, I'd maybe try doing this, and that made a little contributing factor. Because when we get to that level, you know, it's about who makes the fewest mistakes and who's the closest to perfection. And it does. It takes a village and it takes a team to do that. So I tell people all the time, the more competitive you want to be, it doesn't need to be just you out there against the world. The more competitive you want to be, the bigger your team better be, because it's going to take a lot of people to help make that happen. And it's awesome that, you know, you have that support just within your family, which leads me to my next question. You know, I have a lot of families that listen that maybe don't raise livestock or do, but they show a lot. And, you know, we get to kind of this time of year, you're jackpotting, you're looking towards state fairs, you're getting through your county fairs, you know, and we get kind of into the end of July and stuff. And I feel like there's a lot of burnout sometimes with families. And how do you guys, well, and not just burnout, but saying, you know, gosh, you know, with the kids, you know, all my friends are over here at the lake, I'm working animals, you know, because we got a show this weekend, and maybe they want to be doing that, maybe they don't. How do you guys as a family kind of balance your time between career, between showing, between kind of family time, and keep yourselves really motivated and making sure that there's not a lot of burnout or anything like that involved?
Yeah, I guess the first way to describe that, Cody, is showing is our family time. You know, and we do it as a family. We always have, we always will, and I think that's very, very important. And then that's not to put down, or, you know, if there's a young person that has, you know, someone that's not related, that's their mentor, that is absolutely awesome, you know. And I consider, I'm a blessed person to be able to do this as a family, and I'm very blessed that my kids have the same drive and passion that I do. You know, I tell my kids, in my 10 years, that was another point I want to bring up. You think of a 10-year show career, that a kid has. And that sounds like a long time, but I tell you what, it's over before you ever, in the blink of an eye, it seems like. You know, if there's something that you want to do in the course of your career, a big goal, boy, don't wait till your last year to bear down, because it's hard, you know, and you know, never take anything for granted. And I think that's what maybe keeps us focused and prevents that burnout as a family. You know, I tell my kids, I had a very, very successful career showing steers, but I tell my kids all the time, I never won a steer show bigger than our county fair. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I never did. I mean, there were some jackpots and stuff like that. I had a great career. I had a reserve steer at our state fair in 94, 95, 98, three times. Reserve at Denver in 97. I was premier exhibitor that year. Way, way cool experience. Way, way cool career. Very successful, you know. And that was one thing. So, like, Tracy's 11 years older. I mean, Tracy and Gina showed high percent key cattle that Dad raised, you know, and didn't, I mean, they didn't know what they were doing compared to where we've evolved now. And I honestly think that's been Tracy's biggest drive, you know, through life and through his career, as far as, you know, his kids showing and customers showing and selling steers, is he didn't have that success. You know, and so I think that's part of what keeps you hungry, you know. One thing that's really stuck in my head is I remember where I'm gone working pretty much every day. I come home one evening. I told the girls, it was before the boys were kind of showing. I told the girls, I was like, hey, I want to see some goats out in the yard. Let's go. They brought them out, and I hadn't seen them setting them up, you know, and things weren't quite driving right. They weren't quite leading right, and I'm not gonna lie, it's not all unicorns and rainbows and, you know, fairy tales around here all the time. I mean, it gets heated, you know, because we all do care, and we're all invested, you know. I remind myself, I try to remind myself more often to not forget the big picture. You know, we're raising kids. We're not raising livestock. We're raising kids. But one of the girls that night, I was kind of getting on them, and things weren't showing right. And I could tell, you know, they hadn't been putting the time in. You know, we're what now? Today's the 9th, you know, we're just over 37 days out from like state fair time now. You know, this is like the big push. This is the final countdown. This is where you don't drop the ball. We're in the red zone, and this is where you got to bear down. And I remember one of the girls that night made a comment to me, Dad, you're just mad at us if we don't win. Well, that's when we stopped showing, and the three of us sat down in the yard under a shade tree, and we had a really good heart-to-heart. And because when she said that, I'll be honest with you, Cody, it absolutely broke my heart. We sat down and we had a talk, and I told my daughters, I was like, hey, when you go in the ring, if you do everything that I know that you're capable of, and I'm not just talking when you're in the ring, but if you've done everything that I know you're capable of, as far as your daily care, your exercise, your working hair, and your showmanship, and you go in there and you show the wheels off that thing, I said, I don't give a darn about how you place. If you go in there and perform at the level I know you're capable of, let the chips fall where they may. And I think that really lit a fire under them girls, you know, because it wasn't about winning. It was about taking pride and taking ownership of how you take care of your project, how you present your animal, how you present yourself. And I think it was kind of an eye-opening for the girls of that's what's important. And, you know, I've reflected back to that conversation underneath that. I'm sitting here in the driveway looking at that shade tree right now. And I've reflected back to that conversation we had that evening. And that's something that's been very, very good for us as a family, you know. I think as long as we stay in our lane, keep our nose to the grindstone, and do our deal, then let the chips fall where they may. And I think that's taking pride in our work is we're taking pride in what we present, what we take to town, what we take to shows. That's what keeps us from getting burnout.
I think that that's, you touched on a really good point there in the end, and that's actually interesting that you mentioned that, because just last night I was recording an episode with Jarrah Settles and Barrett Carlisle talking about, you know, yep, a lot of different things, but setting goals. And we had a really good conversation about too many times I feel like show families or show teams or even kids, you know, they'll set the goal of, you know, I want to go win Denver. It's like, well, the reality is, you know, the stars all have to align. And obviously any show we're going to go to, the goal's to win it, right? But we said, yep, you know, yeah, we feel absolutely, like you just said to your kids there is like, maybe the goal, instead of saying, you know, the only thing that matters is that I go win state fair, is, you know, let's go be competitive. Like, let's go be a competitor there, and the chips are going to fall. Because even, you know, you might think you have the best one, and maybe you do. Maybe you have the one that blows the doors off your county fair, but that judge just decides there's something about that goat that they hate, and you're going to stand third. You know, and maybe that's just what it is. So it's an unobtainable goal. But if we can say, you know what, I'm going to go stand out there, and my goal is to be a competitor deserving of, you know, and earning being out there in Champion Drive. And I think that what you said is so perfect. And we did. We had a big conversation in the other podcasts about that, of how, you know, it's really, it's important to set a healthy boundary like that. Because at the end of the day, you know, we can't control winning, like you said, in we can only control being competitive.
I've told our kids, you know, and I don't want this to come off the, you know, come off the wrong way, but I've told our kids, you know, it's let's not make our goal to win the show. Let's go make our goal. I said, you know, I told the kids, make a judge look foolish for not using you. You know, make that your goal, and that way it turns the focus. The focus isn't the prize or the banner or the buckle. The focus is the quality of your project and what you put in it and how you present it. You know, I guess the buckle and the banner and stuff, you know, that's great. You know, that kind of comes afterwards. But we have to focus on what we're doing, not on what we're trying to, not the award presented. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think back to 2 years. So like the first really big goal on the goat side was you know, when Chloe's like, I want to try to win state fair, you know? And I remember in 14, when she did that and she attained that goal, you know, we camp at our state fair and Chloe was, I mean, she was, I knew how bad she wanted it. And I knew how hard she worked to get it. And the reaction was less than maybe I would have expected. And we got to camp her that night. I asked Claudia, I said, you happy? She says, oh, Dad, I'm so happy. And I said, well, I was kind of made come. I said, well, I don't know if you were shocked or what, but, you know, you didn't have much reaction when you won. And she said, Dad, I didn't want the other kids to feel bad for not winning by celebrating too much. And I thought, okay, maybe we're doing all right raising these kids, you know, because that's what popped into her head. Now you take that, you know, she come off that Louisville deal. After that year at State Fair, she wins Exarban. We get to State Fair the next year, and she's got a really good weather from Pfeiffer's. And that dude was good. We didn't jackpot him near as much. We left his hair on him to try to keep his skin in better shape. So we didn't have him off, you know, out as much. And when we get ready to go state fair, you know, I'm usually shearing them things late at night. And because we go early the next morning. And I kept handling that goat all summer long. And I'm like, oh, we're all right. That's just hair. You know, we're fresh enough. And I sheared him off. And sure enough, I was wrong. I remember Bridget and Chloe were standing there when I got done shearing him. They're like, what do you think, Dad? I said, that's a really good goat that might be just a tick chubby, you know. And we go up there, and that dude looked awesome. He fit up like a rock star. She showed the absolute wheels off of him. She barely wins her class and gets left standing in the division. And she conducted herself very well. She come out of the ring. We're walking back, and we're walking side by side. She says, Dad, what did I do wrong? I said, nothing. She's like, well, we got beat. What did I do wrong? And I was like, nothing, kid. That's my dad's always said, that's why they call it showing, not winning, you know. And I was like, hey, it wasn't our day, you know. And the guy that judged that year called him to a T. That's a really good goat, maybe a tick chubby. And he did not like him with a little bloom on him. And, you know, that's why we understood why he got beat. We agreed with it. We went on, you know. But it was really, really good for my daughter. I had a good friend text me that night. He's like, hey, you know, how's it going? I'm like, oh, fine. Why? Well, he's like, oh, I'm good at saying congratulations. I'm not very good at saying, well, that kind of sucked, you know. And I'm like, it'll be fine. I said it'll be the best thing for my kid. And he's like, why is that? I said, well, she's been on a pretty good roll. And we're going to spin this into a positive. We're going to use this to light a fire. And that girl, before the show was over, Chloe came up to me. She says, Dad, what do I need to do to my goat to get ready for Exarvin? I said, well, we're going to feed him this. We're going to exercise him this. And you're going to keep showing the tar out of him, you know. She went home, did every one of those to a T, and then some. You know, she turns around, that same goat that barely won his class at State Fair, he wins Exarvin for her the second year in a row. That was the best thing that could have happened to her. It relit the fire. And sometimes, you know, I was listening to I listened to a lot of different podcasts, and there was another show dad, I guess. And they were talking about they take time at each show to process how they did, how what the judge said about their animal. And I implement it. We went to a little local show this past weekend. And honestly, there a few weeks ago, we've been with our lambs this year. We've been hitting the jackpot road really hard. And Trey, our youngest one, he shows the lambs. He's been having a phenomenal year with the sheep. You know, we decided a few weeks ago, hey, we're going to put the sheep up and shut them down and get ready for later in the summer. And we had a little local show right here in town. It's 3 miles away. You know, local FFA chapter puts it on. And Trey, you know, of course, his friends are going to be there. You know, they're going to show. Hey, Dad, can I take a sheep or two? I was like, oh, I guess, yeah, we can, you know. And so we went in there. He's had a phenomenal year. And his sheep look like they should have for our game plan, you know, our goals. We'd shut them down. We backed off of them, you know, freshened them up a little bit. They look just a little bit green again, a little bit bloomy, or, you know, weren't bloomy enough. And went in there, and he got beat by more mature, bloomier sheep, you know, that were stouter right now. And I could tell when he come out of the ring with his weather, you could read just a little bit of emotion in him. You know, he conducted himself well, but you could just, it wasn't anger, it was disappointment, you know. And Trey, our youngest one, he is our Ricky Bobby, you know. If you're not first, you're last. And he lives up to that name to a T. But I remembered hearing that on that other podcast, and I pulled him aside. And I mean, I pulled him aside like 10 foot outside the ring. I said, hey, bud, let's talk about this. What did the judge say? He told me. Does that fit your animal? Well, yeah. What did he say about the two that beat you? You know, like the weather was third. I said, what did he say about the two that beat you? Well, they're bigger and stouter and, you know, farther along. I said, is that true? Yeah. I said, was this show was today. Is this our goal? Is this our endpoint? Well, no. Then we're going to take that and we're going to go forward with it. You know, and I think it's important to take time to have that discussion with your kid, process it, and it gets them on board with the whole bigger picture of the project. So that's something, you know, it was just this past weekend we did that. And that's one thing as a show dad, I want to do more going forward. So I think that's important.
I 100% agree with you. I think more people need to have those kind of conversations too, because we do, it's like, just because this animal is our type and we know we've done everything possible, doesn't mean it's going to be that judge's type. And it doesn't mean that it's not good. Have a lot of times, you know, a kid will come out of class or they'll make it to champion drive and they get left standing with their lamb, and they come out and they're like, you know, well, what's wrong with my lamb? You know, why is that other one beating? And it's like, sometimes your animal's just not that judge's type, and that's okay. I think the more, all I ever ask out of a judge is like, be consistent and stay true to what you like. If you're going to get to a champion drive and maybe the whole champion drive is full of sheep that are not my type, not my kind, but you were consistent and you accurately talked about all those in the mic, I as an exhibitor have no right to be upset. And I feel like we get too consumed by this, and people get too consumed with their type, and you know, mine's a really good one. And it's like, and yours is a really good one, but that's not what the judge likes, and that's okay. Yep. And so I think that's a great conversation that definitely needs to happen more often than it probably does with a lot of show families. So I can really appreciate that.
Yeah, I hate when, well, that, you know, you hear grumblings afterwards, you know, well, that guy don't know nothing, you know. Well, obviously he must know something. He got the job to judge the show. So instead of hating, let's just make a positive out of it and build off of it.
Right. Well, and I always tell people, I say, you know what, remember that today was that kid's day. And it's like, it's not about you anymore. The moment you walk out and you were left standing, you know, you go congratulate that kid that just won, you and your family. You know, you go to the restaurant, you put your animals away, you call it a night, and you just look forward to the next one. It's like, that was that kid's day. And, you know, who knows? Yeah. Maybe you think that's a terrible one, and maybe that kid is never going to win another jackpot or county fair or anything the whole season. Today was the best day that kid was going to have of this whole entire show season. It's like, and I can tell you as a parent, but also because my daughter's so young right now, but as somebody with a lot of show families, I stand around the side of the ring, and it's like, when you have a kid that wins and you can tell they're happy, and there's not many people clapping along the side of the ring, you know, it really takes away from that kid. And I hope that someday when my daughter's old and showing and she has success and she wins, it's like, me as a parent, it's like, I hope that everyone can be supportive and happy of that. So I try to put that same energy out there in the universe now that, you know, whether we get spanked or we get left standing or whatever it may be, if somebody else is winning, it's like, I'm going to clap for them because that was their day. They earned it. Their family was at home working hard. And I think that needs to be celebrated.
Absolutely. I agree 100%, Cody. Yeah, I take, as an example there, it was about a month ago, we went to, in one weekend, I think we showed them lambs in four rings in one weekend. And we left home on a Friday night, and, you know, we didn't get home till Sunday evening. And the lambs were on the trailer. And I know that the second day we were showing, and Trey's got a ewe lamb that he's had some success with this year. And she has an attitude of her own. I mean, her name is Bad Baby. And I don't know if you know who Bad Baby is, but it's kind of a funny story. The boys kind of come up on their own. The girl that was on the Dr. Phil show, the Catch Me Outside, how about that?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Apparently, she's now a rapper that goes by Bad Baby. So they've named this you Bad Baby. And her personality fits that name to a T. And she can show really, really well, or she can be pretty cantankerous. And Trey's demeanor or approach sometimes, they'll butt heads. And like when she acts up, he acts up, and it snowballs and the wheels fall off, and it's just a bad deal. Well, we were showing that Sunday at a show, and it was a 2-ring deal, and it was the first ring. Showed his weather's good. He comes in with that hue, and I mean, they struggled. It was not pretty. It wasn't pretty at all. Fortunately, she ends up winning the show still. And he could tell, I mean, he was upset. I was upset, you know. And we went back to the trailer. He sat down in a chair. I sat down next to him. And I'm like, hey, this isn't going to fly. We can't do this. You know, we can't let that happen, you know. And I said, but here's the really lucky part. Is in about 10 minutes, they're going to start another show and you have an opportunity to redeem yourself, you know? And he calmed down, he processed it, and he went into that second ring and he showed all three lambs great. Did a great job, you know? And it was all about his attitude, you know? And those animals, they feed off the kid's attitude. And he went in there and did a great job. And for him to right away come back from what was kind of an embarrassing moment, you know, in the first ring and come back and show like a rock star in the second ring. That was bigger than winning the show for me and just for his kid. And there was someone in the stands, like when he won the second ring, I mean, they hooped, hollered and clapped. And I thanked him afterwards because I was like, man, that's awesome. And I think, you know, like in the back of my mind, that same person seen what he did in the first ring. And for him to re-rack, regroup, and overcome it and come back and do a great job, you know, just an hour later, you know, that was the big victory, you know. So I think that is important.
I agree, and I do. I think how we conduct ourselves at shows matters because, like you said, you know, he had shown in that first ring and he won. So it's like that same person could have been hooping and hollering and clapping and cheering him on then, but it's like they probably saw the frustration and I'm sure they said,
yeah,
that's
it was
a nice animal.
It was kind of crickets in that first ring, I'll admit.
right. They're like, that kid's wild, you know, and then you come back and it is. And that's a great, especially right there back to back, you know, that is just a great perspective of how we behave matters. Sometimes we get to these shows and we get so tunnel visioned of like, we got to do what we got to do with our animals. You know, we got to get these shown. And we forget that there is a lot of people, and especially if you're a competitive family like you guys are, there's a lot of people that you don't, you know, pay attention to at the time, you know, whose eyes are on you. And they're looking to you to be an example of not just a champion, but obviously a winner's mentality. So I think that is great and speaks to that. So as we round out this episode here, I always ask the same final question, and especially given where you are now versus, you know, your very competitive show career as well, I'm interested to hear your answer. But if you could look back at that kind of 16, 18-year-old version of yourself, as you're starting to look towards leaving the house, going out, starting your life, what advice would you give yourself?
You know, you gave me that question ahead of time, Cody, and I've had time to think about it. I'll be honest, it's a hard one for me. It is hard. There's days that I feel old, and there's days that I feel like I'm still 16 or 18. I mean, especially this time of year, Cody, we're getting ready for these county fairs and we're doing our state fair prep. This is my Christmas time. You know, this is what makes my blood pump. You know, I'll admit I absolutely love it. I get ate up with it. The advice I would give to my 16, 18 year old self, for one, be open-minded. Be open-minded because if you'd asked me at 16 or 18, if you'd come up to me, said, Troy, at 41 years old, your family's going to be raising and showing goats, I would have laughed all the way out of my chair. I never would have dreamed that. So I think the biggest thing is be open-minded And don't be afraid to recognize opportunity when it presents itself. Because, I mean, we can sit here and plan out, and we've talked about planning and setting goals, and we can sit there and make a playbook. But sometimes we just have to recognize the opportunities the good Lord puts in front of us, you know. And I honestly, you know, the other thing I jotted down was, you know, to find your own path. Because when I was younger, you know, we talked about me and my siblings showing and the age difference between my brother and I. And I mean, for a lot of years, all I wanted to be was, I wanted to be him, you know. And when I decided I'm way better at being Troy than I am at being Tracy, and just finding a new direction and a new species and doing our own deal. And it's a little bit separation too, you know, I mean, like we get along great. We're really good brothers. It's just, you know, we just kind of do our own deal. That's similar, just kind of in different avenues. So don't be, you know, find your own path. And I see that in my own kids, you know, Bridget and I encourage our kids, you know, what do you want to do? And it's really interesting to watch your kids grow up and find what they're passionate about. And we've seen them change directions too. And we're going to support them and do everything that we can and to help them, you know, pursue those things that they're interested in. The last thing I want to say to my 16 or 18 year old self, wear shorts. Because I was the kid that always had the Wrangler cowboy cut, like original, you know, with cowboy boots on. And I'll be honest, I never really wore shorts in the summertime until about 2, 3, 4, or 5 years ago. It's the best thing since sliced bread. So if I could go back and tell myself, wear shorts, take the jeans off when it's hot out, it's a lot better deal.
I love that. And you know what? I will tell you, that's funny that you mentioned that, because coming from the cattle world, you know, everyone wears jeans, and it's like, you know, start your jeans till they stand up on their own. And it's like, you got to wear jeans and boots. Then you come to the sheep world, you know, you go to a sheep jackpot show in the summer, you're hard pressed to find a pair of jeans, except for on the exhibitors, you know, and half the time those exhibitors are coming back out to the trailer, the jeans are going off, you know, the Nike shorts are going on. And that's the last of that. When I tell you what, when we broke into the sheep world and I was like, this is the life for me, because I agree, you know, in the cattle deals, it's 110, you know, and you're in a long sleeve and jeans and you brought nothing else, because that's just what you do. But not in the sheep and goat world. We're like, goodbye pants, you know.
Yeah, the ones crazier than that is the hog guys. I mean, that was the shorts and flip flops.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, they don't even believe in appropriate footwear.
You talk
footwear.
About comfort, you go to a hog show.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're like an oversized T-shirt, shorts, flip-flops, you know. It's like every mom there, the hair's just up in a bun, and it's like we're here to pig show, and we don't care about what else is going on. No, I agree. Yep. So yep. Sound
Tyson,
advice.
Tyson, my older boy, started showing some pigs this year, you know. And we went to a couple jackpots, and it honestly drives my OCD crazy, because I don't know what to do with my hands. I mean, like the first jackpot show, some of the other families we went with, they were finally like, Troy, take a chair and go to the ring and just watch the show. We got this. And that was hard for me to do, but I have no clue what I'm doing in the pig deal anyway. So that's what I did. But yeah, it's all about getting out of your comfort zone and going after it.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. I agree. So I really appreciate you being on, Troy. This has been a great one. I've needed to do an episode really from a show family perspective, because at the end of the day, as producers, that's what we're doing, is we're selling these animals to exhibitors and to families that are a lot like yours, a lot like mine. You know, this makes up and really consumes a lot of their time and their life, and it's important to them. So I think this is an extremely relatable episode, and I really appreciate you carving out the time.
Well, I appreciate you reaching out to me, Cody, and I was, you know, this is You know, I was honored to join you this morning. So I was, well, you know, when I first replied to you, I was like, well, I'm not sure if we're exactly interesting enough to do an episode on, but, you know, I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, without a doubt. It's been a good one. So I'm going to have to get out to Iowa, I guess, and look at some goats and see what the heck's going on with that. And I always seem to be traveling. I've been kind of through your area, actually, but it was just kind of cruising through on my way back from Indiana. But, yeah, definitely. Yep. I appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Yep, sounds great, Cody. Thank you very much.
What an incredible episode. Like I promised you in the intro of this episode, there was going to be a lot of really good content. And I love this episode because while Troy comes from a background in livestock, this really to me is a Generation 1 episode because he set out with his family. They fell in love with goats. And even though he had such a strong cattle background, they broke out and they did their own thing. And they've done it, obviously, as you can tell from this episode, so successfully. And that speaks, I believe, to a lot of people out there. Generation 1 was not created just for the people that came from town or came from no ag background and, you know, got into the livestock industry completely Generation 1. It's also for those of you out there who come from a family operation, but you want to carve your own way. And Troy talked about that in this episode of how they really went about it their own way and with an incredible team and support and family support to go out and be so successful. So I hope that speaks to you. If you have any other people that you want to hear from that are out there on the road, they're winning, you've seen them at shows and you say, I want to know their story, let me know. I want to record them. I want to get them on. We're going to do that for you. All in all, an incredible episode. We'll see you on the next one.
So many ways, trouble finds trouble if in trouble you stay. Pick a different sweetheart, don't keep up with your game, else you'll be in trouble. What you need right now.